listening to In the Name of God from Kingdom Come Trust in Belfast, Northern Ireland, an international faith-based show comprising music, news and interviews from all over the world.
Hi, I'm Raymond McCulloch, and on our ninth show of this series, we again have a variety of music from Canada, Australia and California. We have the second part of our interview with Canadian Joel Molan, married to Melanie of the Cree First Nation and the founder of a ministry called Northern Connections. And of course, we have our usual faith-based news feature, Bread News International. We started the show today with the Frenchies from British Columbia, Canada, brother and sister, Christina and Quinn Backhand. We'll have more great music for you shortly, but first, let me introduce again my guest for today, Joel Molan. Joel flies regional jets for Air Canada and also heads up the Manitoba-based ministry of Northern Connections, reaching out to Northern Native communities and to other tribes and nations through cultural expressions. Last week we talked about the ministry and trips to here in Northern Ireland and to Israel, but the Lord has also led Joel's ministry to Africa.
So Rwanda then, how did that come about? It's not a natural progression from Ireland to Israel and then to Rwanda, or is it?
Rwanda came by means of divine appointment through connections on a website. He led a pastor in Kigali, Rwanda to contact us. I kind of played along with him for months, just trying to avoid him because
of all the sort of spam and stuff that
exactly.
You're used to from
so
that.
So we kind of tested him out considerably. And as we corresponded with him, we always gave him a means to be true to his word.
And that came good then?
Every time he was a man of honor. We had no monies to do any kind of global traveling with that capacity. But the airline afforded me to do such things as well at the time, but we also needed more than just to have the ability to travel globally at a moment's notice for next to nothing.
I believe the first trip didn't quite come off as planned, is that right?
It was, but it was more of a test, somewhat similar to Abraham and Isaac. When I decided to ask the Lord, what am I supposed to do with this guy that keeps emailing me and telling me that I have a message for him without ever asking for money or anything, but just saying that we had a message to deliver to his country. So I sought the Lord and I said, Lord, if you want us to go, out of the spur of the moment, I said, well, Lord, I want $750 in my hand by the end of the month. And the end of the month was 4 days away. On the third day, and for me, God was using the third day for a spiritual impact because on the third day he rose. So on the third day, I received $600 unsolicited and unannounced to anybody that I was requesting it. I was asking God for it to be received privately. And late afternoon, another check came in for $150. So we had the confirmation that we had to go. Well, we set off to Kigali. We did a bunch of researching. I had some time set up that afforded me a week and a half off. And so we set dates and we planned our time. We took off and we found that at the time the best route would be through Tel Aviv, Israel. We got into Tel Aviv, but as it turns out, we had to turn back. We joke about it today where we just went to Israel for coffee and came back. And the reason why we couldn't continue was that there was some kind of breakdown in Ethiopian Airlines, which was our connecting flight to Kigali, Rwanda. Its reservation system seemed to have malfunctioned and started booking more and more confirmed passengers, yet not accounting for the lack of seats, which resulted in 30 seats oversold. The seats never exist.
But that must have been a big blow. Like, here you are, confirmation, and off you go, and then you don't go?
For me, I could handle all that, but the problem is that there's others involved, and much more vulnerable. You know, it was like going to tell your best friend that his wife left him or something. Who wants that job? It really hurted me more, I think, to share with the orphans and the pastors that were going to meet us. And
of course, the people, they were expecting
you. They were fully expecting us, you know, and they had prepared and had gone into great expense for their economic situation. So what we decided between my wife and I was that we would send funds to cover their expenses and also provide additional funds to see that those orphans that were praying and that were eager to see us, that they would get a very good meal for Christmas and New Year's. We only had $400, but that $400 fed some 600 or 700 kids. So we came back and it was like a confirmation because we got upgraded into business class. We were wined and dined all the way home, but in my spirit, I was just fighting with the Lord, saying, like, why did you
bring this? Why did that happen? Yeah.
You know, like, what did we miss something? And later on, I would say that we didn't miss anything really great, but what God was doing was just testing us to see if we would actually do it.
I come to you, I'm broken. I come to you in pain. I come to you, I'm hurting. I come to you again. I come to you with tears, Lord. I do not cry alone. I feel your tears upon my cheek. They mingle with my own.
Great song from a great voice, Australian lady Maria Ford, and In the Palm of His Hand. Now let's see if Joel and Melanie finally made it to Rwanda.
Well, in Winnipeg, waiting to go back home. And again, like I said, we always get led by the Spirit for practically everything. So we went into this bookstore. just happened to be a book out of place from its normal context. God just kind of pointed me in that direction, and it was called Left to Tell, which was about a Rwandese girl who had suffered. It just talks about this girl's surviving the genocide, becoming a believer through the atrocities and able to forgive. As I got all this information, I got a different paradigm of what I was expecting. It kind of prepared me to understand a people's way of thinking and a lifestyle that they had before, during, and after. Right at that time when I got the gist of the book, I got a phone call from the pastor who invited us to Rwanda. He underlined the entire book for me without ever knowing that I had read this book. Then I saw that not only was it a test to go to Israel, but it was also something that was lacking. I could have read that book beforehand, but it was a test / education process. So when we went in, we ourselves got the red carpet treatment by Air Canada, by British Airways and Kenya Airlines, all the way through. We got into London Heathrow and we met a gentleman who lives in Baltimore, Washington, who was on his way back from Nairobi. And God gave us favor with him because we only met him for 5 minutes and already he had given us the keys to a house in the outskirts of Nairobi. We got our flight right away. We had 3 days to kill. Again, the three-day thing, eh? We spent 3 days in his house, and our house back home could have fit in the living quarters that we had in this house. We had an incredible time. 3 days later, we arrived in Kigali, welcomed by a group of five pastors, all their families. Each pastor had like five or six, a minister of finance for the Rwandan government.
They really made you feel welcome?
We were totally welcomed. We had developed an incredible relationship over our failed attempts, plus the Christmas supper and New Year's meals.
And now you finally got here.
And then we finally got there. The message that Pastor Regariosi continuously said to us was that God had told him that we had a message for him. We soon discovered what that message was, because we ourselves didn't know what he was asking for. God just told us to go. And so as we shared about past effects of the church and the colonization in the Americas, and that we need to be comfortable in the way God created us, and if he made you a Rwandan, then be comfortable with that. And also, don't forget the lessons that were spoken to you in your past. There's many traditions historically in each people's cultures that are not necessarily evil. In fact, they're gifts of God that are treasures to be opened later on. They've become their worst own enemies. They're trying to mimic Europeans constantly.
Red News International.
In this bulletin, improving Muslim-Jewish relations. Is it possible? And when was the Bible really written? Jerry McCulloch reports.
Report from Fox News. By decoding the inscription on a 3,000-year-old piece of pottery, an Israeli professor has concluded that parts of the Bible were written hundreds of years earlier than suspected. The pottery shard was discovered at excavations at Kirbet Kayafa, near the Elah Valley in Israel, about 18 miles west of Jerusalem. Carbon dating places it in the 10th century BC, making the shard about 1,000 years older than the Dead Sea Scrolls. Professor Gershon Galil of the University of Haifa deciphered the ancient writing, basing his interpretation on the use of verbs and content particular to the Hebrew language. It turned out to be a social statement relating to slaves, widows, and orphans, Galil explained in a statement from the university. The inscription is the earliest example of Hebrew writing found, which stands in opposition to the dating of the composition of the Bible in current research. Prior to this discovery, it was not believed that the Bible or parts of it could have been written this long ago. According to Israeli newspaper Haaretz, current theory holds that the Bible could not have been written before the 6th century BCE, because Hebrew writing did not exist until then.
Improving Muslim-Jewish relations. Is it possible? Report from Israel National Radio. Can the Taliban turn to be Israel lovers? Are the Peth and Pashtun tribes really one of the lost tribes of Israel? Can we all be friends? Dr. Navras Ja'at Afridi is a researcher in Indo-Judaic studies and medieval and modern Indian history, with a focus on Pathans, Pakhtuns, Pashtuns, and a member of the advisory team on the 10 Lost Tribes Challenge Expeditions of Discovery. Dr. Afridi says he was born a Muslim, but describes himself today as a human secularist with a deep belief in God. He spent a year in Israel and came away with a love and appreciation for the Jewish nation. He says there are perhaps 40 million Pathans alive today who generally believe that they descended from the lost tribes of Israel, calling themselves Bani Israel, B'nai Israel, or Children of Israel. Their women light candles on Friday nights. Their men wear ritual fringes on their clothes. They circumcise their male infants at 8 days old, do not shave the side locks on their heads, and they also practice levirate marriage. If the Pathan tribes, who were converted to Islam centuries ago, really did stem from the lost tribes, then in the end of days, according to our prophets, God will change their hearts and bring them back to their people and their land, the land of Israel. Dr. Afridi says, "There were no Jews in my hometown, Lucknow. I only met Jews for the first time when I started researching for my PhD. But the more I read about Jews, the more my admiration grew for them." Dr. Navras Afridi is making a daily effort to repair Muslim-Jewish relations and hopes through his work in holding seminars and disseminating information about Israel and the Jewish people that the Muslim world will move closer towards peace and harmony with the Jewish people.
More information on these and other Bread News stories at kingdomcome.org.uk/news.
Now back for the final part of that interview with Joel Mullen.
You were there what, for a week or?
Oh, we were there for 10 days.
And you got to see a fair bit of Rwanda, which is a horrendous story behind it in recent
years. Yeah, we were introduced to their history. The typical Rwandese welcome.
Your father was French, so you'd have a language like there with
That's
Rwanda.
Right, yeah. In fact, most of my French came back to me in Rwanda. It was a bit of a time to speak it while I was there.
Presumably helped the communication?
It actually helped a great deal because a lot of times I didn't have to use interpreters unless my wife was required. Especially being French, there's a certain amount of guilt that came in with walking into that country. Although the Belgians colonized that country and wreaked havoc in it, the French were there and actually supported the wrong side, knowingly, because they wanted to continue the rape relationship. And so I felt very ashamed and somewhat unworthy. So I hung on to my Canadian identity. I have more traditional past with Aboriginal people than any other connections. But the fact is that having French blood also brought me into a place where I can apologize on behalf of not all the French, but on behalf of myself.
And even that makes an impact?
It made a huge impact because when we went into one small community, one of the girls said, "Well, I never expect anything from a white man, never mind a Frenchman, but I see something different in you." That touched me extremely deeply, right to the core, because I sense forgiveness for me as a person, but also for my family. I can't say for all of the French.
And presumably a big weight lifting off that.
There was. You know, we're living in a day where reconciliation is everything, because God is in the business to reconciliate his body. You know, he's tired of a mentally retarded body, a handicapped body.
You had a positive experience the second time and then you went back.
What we did is we asked them to pray specifically that God would open the doors so that we can bring a team. On the very soils that they were praying, 3 months to the day, they realized it. Unknowingly, not paying too much attention to it. But when I brought it up to them, to those that I had seen for a second time, saying that God has answered your prayers, here we are.
To the day?
Their spirits rose. It impacted them for sure. Because those people live by faith. We, you know, in North America, understand faith, but we don't live it.
The native people of North America have suffered. It has had a major negative impact on them. Is that the same in Rwanda? Is it the same thing, or are there differences?
denominations have wreaked havoc in many parts of Africa. Mm. Every symptom that you see in North America is duplicated in Africa. The only exception to that would be the welfare system. The welfare system to our North American people was introduced and it became a greater evil than what is seen in Africa. Because in Africa, if you don't work, you don't eat.
Yeah,
in North America, if you don't work, you go on welfare. It rips you off even more so of your pride and your self-esteem.
So these people have got to recover, they've got to come back or they die, is it?
That's right.
Those who survive.
Yeah, they come out fighting, right? Because when people's lives are in a balance, they either perish or they fight. Mm. Sure, there's lots of aid that goes into Africa, but that aid is of a different mentality as opposed to oppressing our people with it. You know, in Africa, it alleviates the worst of the things because they can't always expect it all the time.
Does that difference in them, they have to do something themselves, not depend on a government, does that affect their spiritual response to the
world? Oh, by far, because you know what? If you can't provide for your family, whether in clothing or housing, and you start praying to the God who created us all and gives us all, give us this day our daily bread, not necessarily just in material, but also in spirit, then you start to see God doing the impossibles for those people.
So their faith has increased as a result of what they've experienced? And
that's the same quote that one of the pastors there says, I've gone to North America and I've done Bible school. We've done outreaches in North America. And what I've noticed is that North Americans know about faith and they can tell you where it's found in the scriptures. But for most of them, they don't live by faith. But African peoples generally live by faith. They live day by day.
Obviously, in mixing the two cultures in the first place, they're being encouraged to bring out their own culture. But what about if they come back to Canada, to First Nations situations and reserves in Canada?
And this is a big turning point for our ministry, as opposed to just working with our own people, trying to raise their self-esteem so that they can actually hold their heads up and look to the Lord. We discovered that we couldn't do anything of that nature. So when we brought our people overseas, we saw a sense of pride built up, a wholesome pride, self-esteem pride. You know, in order to love somebody, you need to be able to love yourself. So that's where they were coming to, into that destiny. And as they shared their stories, they saw that they were encouraging others, which brought them into an even greater fulfillment in their destinies. And what they realized is that, man, we got it good in North America.
You'll find more information about Joel, Northern Connections, and all of our previous interviews and music on our website, kingdomcome.org.uk. We finish the show off with a song called My Love from California band Kide Moore.
My love is a picture window where I can see the sky. I may not reach those heavens, but I will always try. My love can see right through me like I was made of glass. When I a windswept mountain where I am free to roam, a boat out on the ocean that safely takes me home. My love can see right through me like I was made of glass. When I am dark and gloomy, it whispers this shall pass. Thank you.
see right through me, like I was made of glass. When I am dark and gloomy, in whispers this shall pass. My love is a windswept mountain, where I am free to roam.
My love.
You've been listening to In the Name of God from Kingdom Come Trust in Belfast, Northern Ireland. If you would like to contribute to this ministry, go to the partner page under radio on the Kingdom Come Trust website. That's www.kingdomcome.org.uk. You can make a monthly contribution or a one-off gift there. Join us again next week for more music, news and sins of the fathers, an interview with English new church leader and author Roger Mitchell. And thanks for all your encouraging emails. Keep writing to us. Slán agus banna tia. Bye and God bless.